Good morning and a very happy new year to you. I suspect it was a muted ringing in, because we're right back in it now again. The numbers are scary and it's level 5 time. Batten down the hatches. January, always a fairly grim month, but this one might be epic. We're old hands at this game by now, so no need to rehash the restrictions and their necessity. So, for one morning only, we're going to bring you the radio highlights of the past 12 months. And there were many standout moments. Some heartbreaking and poignant, some uplifting, some enraging, and some quite hilarious, not always intentionally. So, settle back while we play back the year. To start us off, take your mind back to this time last year, heading off to the sales, storms, holiday plans, upcoming elections. Innocent days indeed. And underneath it all, vague murmurings about a kind of flu in China. Corona something or other, sounds a bit like a beer or a band. On Morning Ireland, Gavin Jennings spoke to Kildare man Ben Kavanagh from Wuhan, the city of 11 million people at the centre of this virus.
Well, right now I'm just sitting in my apartment and there's no chance of me going outside anytime soon because everyone's saying not to leave at any point at all.
And are there people out on the streets?
Usually the street I can see from my apartment would be quite busy, but I live near a dual carriageway that I can see, and that it's almost like a ghost town.
Are people allowed out, or are they staying in because they're worried?
You are allowed out, but there's been so many rumours and things that are happening that it's just better not to. Recently, we've been told that it can transmit through eyes now. So people have been wearing masks to keep the infection at bay, but now we're being told to wear eye protection as well, because that's another way we can be infected. I believe that's how the people in the hospital have been transmitting it.
When was the last time you went out?
Maybe 2-3 days ago.
Are you worried?
The only thing that's changed for me for the worry, nothing's really changed for the virus, but everyone's just taking it a lot more seriously. So I wasn't worried 4 or 5 days ago when it was the same situation. But now that everyone's taking it more seriously, it does play on your mind a bit.
If you have to go out tomorrow to get some food, what precautions are you going to take?
Well, I'll have a surgical mask and I'll actually probably wear swimming goggles just to be safe.
Swimming goggles, eh? Well, that was Morning Ireland this time last year. And the World Health Organization had stopped short of declaring the new strain of coronavirus a global emergency. So it wasn't even really impinging on life here, no. Blithely unaware of what was ahead of us, we were all about the election, yes. Remember that?
It's unbelievable, really. The weather outside was the Mary Lou storm.
There isn't enough space on the tallymen's sheets here to count all of the Sinn Féin votes that are spilling out of the boxes.
I have a feeling we're going to be doing a lot of sums over the next few days.
Radical realignment, probably the most stunning opinion poll in the history of the state.
This is democracy in action. You must have missed it when you were in Moscow.
The Labour Party here, it's not good reading for them. They're not in good health.
Home and hosed. Are you sorry you didn't bring someone with you?
Well, if we had a crystal ball, I think we probably would have stood more candidates, but we didn't.
The Sinn Féin people remind me a bit of the Liverpool fans. They know they have it won, but they just don't want to get too excited yet.
Why did Brexit not resonate with voters, do you think?
Yeah. Not to have a Fine Gael TD in Cork South West is quite something. I mean, I remember talking to a Fianna Fáil down there a few years ago who said, Asha, they're still voting for Michael Collins around
no,
here.
No, honestly, it's like
listening to Fine Gael at the moment, actually. It's like someone has said to them, listen, you've got a body odour problem, and they're still going around today saying, have you smelt my perfume? It's amazing.
And was that the point at which you pulled out the accordion?
No, I can pull out the accordion at any time. The accordion didn't re-elect me at all. But
this is probably the first time in the history of the state, in the history of Ireland, that a Sinn Féin TD or MP has represented every single county in Ireland.
In terms of party organisations, wouldn't it be a bit like asking siblings to get married?
That's what people want. That's what they voted for. Keep them two out, was what they said to us on every doorstep.
Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin in a coalition together.
Mary Wilson, great broadcaster, terrible matchmaker. Three,
the general election February 8th, and despite all the talk of change, it would end up more a case of plus a change. But politics is normal, business as usual. You'd almost be nostalgic. But by February 27th, what had been confined to China then moved to northern Italy. By the end of February, February 29th in fact, the virus had arrived.
I'm going to go very quickly before we go to Mark Simpson of the BBC, BBC Northern Ireland. Mark, developments on coronavirus.
Yes, at least one case of coronavirus has been diagnosed here in Northern Ireland, the first confirmed case in Ireland, on the island of Ireland.
So, it was on the island, and initial reactions were summed up by Ray and Ryan.
I'm the sort of fatalistic type of person. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. And as a result, I suppose I could be described as lazy when it comes to things like the coronavirus. Like, you know, if you're the type of person who wipes the ATM with a wet wipe before you use it, well, that's the type of person you are. And this must be hell for you. And I feel sorry for you. I'm not that type of person. I'll do what's necessary. I'll wash my hands with warm water and soap. I won't be travelling to China or northern Italy anytime soon. But apart from that, I just whatever happens, happens.
Oh, very que sera. Wine turbity? Not so much.
If you're travelling in a plane, for example, clean the tray table and avoid seat pockets. This is something that I thought only lunatics did until I got on a plane not too long ago. And with the people I was with, some colleagues, and we all took out wipes, hand sanitizer, the seats, did the full Naomi Campbell, every bit of the tray, the seat, wiped it all down. And thought, I might look like a crazy horse, but I'm still doing this anyway because I want to avoid the risk and also becoming slightly more germophobic or something like that. Maybe I'm just believing my own hype talking here in the mornings. I'm not sure. But clean is good.
Oh, clean would turn out to be vital. And we were encouraged to wash our hands, not just a dash under the tap. No, we were encouraged to sing songs as we scrubbed. And happy birthday after a while. Well, just not cutting it. Here's Oliver Callan.
Wash, wash, wash. No, Prince, you can't. No, don't get it. Secondhand stores, you know, wash your hands after you get the raspberry beret from the store. Another 20 seconds? Dolly Parton. Go clean, go clean, go clean. Scrub, yeah. In between the fingers, around the base of the thumb. That's where all those dirty Dolly Parton germs are living. You know, that's what you call them, because they're dancing on your hand, not because Dolly Parton. You know what I mean. Now, there are also songs that you probably shouldn't be singing, and these are the ones that might upset the HSE advice. Neil Diamond might upset Simon Harris with this. No, you touch your own hands. There, Neil, don't touch. Don't. No, reaching out. No, just keep your hands clean. Don't touch it. No touching. That's going to spread it. No, oh, please, no, don't. Wrong. He's got it all wrong. Maybe MC Hammer, listen to his advice.
You can't touch this.
Yeah, don't touch that. You never know what's been.
You can't touch this.
Oh, God, don't touch that. Get the wipes, baby wipes. Antibacterial.
Oliver Callan. And lest we forget, Joe Duffy adopted a new mantra.
Wash your hands.
I'm sorry, didn't quite catch it once more.
Wash your hands.
And that was to become quite the thing. But all of this was in the very first week of March, slightly surreal and no one quite believing what was happening. But we were left in no doubt as to the seriousness of what we were facing when, on St. Patrick's Night, Taoiseach Leo Varadkar addressed the nation in a speech I suspect few of us will ever forget.
This is the calm before the storm, before the surge. And when it comes, and it will come, never will so many ask so much of so few.
That address was on a Tuesday, and by Thursday night we were surging, with people testing positive for COVID-19 increasing by over 50% in one day. March 29th was the start of our first lockdown, and we were scared because it was a scary time. Overnight, schools and creches closed, pubs and restaurants pulled down their shutters, and whole industries simply stopped. And the numbers of people dying from COVID-19 continued to rise. Many who died were vulnerable because of underlying conditions, and many, but not all, were older. And it was a poem by Dorothy Duffy about her sister Rose Mitchell, read on Liveline, that brought home to us the loss and grief families were experiencing.
My sister is not a statistic. Tomorrow, when the latest deathometer of COVID is announced in sonorous tones, while all the time the bodies still mount and curl towards the middle of the curve, heaped one atop and alongside the other, my sister will be among those numbers. Among the throwaway line, among the platitudes and lowered eyes, an older person with underlying health conditions. A pitiful way to lay rest the bare bones of a life. My sister is not a statistic. Her underlying conditions were love, kindness, belief in the essential goodness of mankind, uproarious laughter, forgiveness, compassion, a storyteller, a survivor, a comforter, a force of nature, and so much more. My sister is not a statistic. She died without the soft touch of a loved one's hand, without a feathered kiss upon her forehead, without the muted murmur of familiar family voices gathered round her bed, without the gentle roar of laughter that comes with memories recalled, evoked from a time that already seems distant, when we were connected by the simplicity of touch, of voice, of presence. My sister is not a statistic. She was a woman who spanned the seven ages, a mother, a grandmother, a great-grandmother, a sister, a friend, an aunt, a carer, a giver. My sister is not a statistic.
Dorothy Duffy talking about her late sister, Rose Mitchell. And Joe spoke to actor Brendan Gleeson about the importance of the work being done in the hospice and how this crisis was impacting our experience of death and dying.
The thing that would I wouldn't like to have to happen was that somebody belonging to me would have to die and you wouldn't be able to get to them. Or that you were in the similar situation and people weren't able to get to you. I mean, you can look through windows, you can do all sorts of things to yes, alleviate yeah, it, but yeah. it just feels it's a dreadful disease that is robbing people of what I have been calling the gift of a good death since I got involved in the hospice. People might underestimate it, but for me it's a hugely important thing. So our heart goes out, you know, to all the people who have to go through it now.
However, he did think there might be some small opportunity to find hope.
Some terrible tragedy happening here, so don't be all, you know, jolly hockey sticks about it. But I think it's an opportunity for us really just to recalibrate a small bit. Like, when we get together and get the thing, like, we're not, it's like we're amazing people that can bring the country together. I think, I don't know of any other place that has stopped the curve to the same extent that we have.
Yeah, like,
and that's because we listen to what we're capable of doing what we're told. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody, you know, thinks, nobody will do that if you'd ask them. Everybody's doing it, pretty much. And it's like, I think it's amazing what we're achieving. So I'm just hoping it's just reprioritizing for the right things and putting all those genius heads together. And all the people on the ground, I think the more people that they consult on the ground instead of sending away for experts and tell people how things are working, like, they're doing wonderful things here, and it's brilliant to see it. So, as I say, 2006 was then, this is now, and I prefer to look up and just think, there's nothing to stop us now. There's nothing to stop us. You know, this coronavirus, I don't know how long it's going to be, or I don't know anything about it, but it feels as if we're up to it. You know, in spite of all the tragedy that's going to happen. And I think we can just try and support the people who are going through that awful thing. I keep thinking the worst of it is, like, it's the thought of dying alone, like, getting it back to the hospice a bit. The thing that I didn't feel with my mom, which I really feel blessed about, was that I didn't feel alone in my grief at all. I didn't feel she was alone in her death. And the horrible thing about this virus is that it's forcing that on people, and it's awful. It's really awful.
Brendan Gleeson on Liveline. And while the fine weather during lockdown definitely helped us, it was a time of anxiety and fear. And while we stayed at home, our roads and streets and villages and cities were eerily empty and silent. But this brought unexpected beauty. Music of Colin McInerney and the Birds from Ray Darcy's Garden. And a poem by Derek Mahon, who also died this year, became something of a touchstone.
Everything is going to be all right. Why should I not be glad to contemplate the clouds clearing beyond the dormer window and a high tide reflected on the ceiling? There will be dying, but there is no need to go into that. The poems flow from the hand unbidden, and the hidden source is the watchful heart. The sun rises in spite of everything, and the far cities are beautiful and bright. I lie here in a riot of sunlight, watching the day break and the clouds fly. Everything is going to be all right.
Derek Mahon, back in a bit. Welcome back to this playback special of the year. Now, as spring spilled into summer, some people found themselves with a lot more time on their hands, time to finally write the great novel or learn the tin whistle. And no interview on Radio Éireann was complete without the question, how's your lockdown? Here's Miriam O'Callaghan with writer Marion Keyes.
How are you spending your time?
I mean, I'm sick acting around on social media, to be honest. I am achieving nothing, absolutely nothing. I'm not writing anything because I can't concentrate. And, you know, I think there's this expectation, if people are at home on their own, that they're going to be incredibly creative, or they're going to learn to play the clarinet or you know, conversational Mandarin. And I think that's awful pressure that people are putting on themselves. Like, these are not normal circumstances, and this isn't a holiday. And I think people feel very, very guilty for not doing these, you know, for not fulfilling the dream that they always thought they would have if they had enough time. So I'm achieving nothing except being on Twitter 28 hours a day and the rest of the time being on Instagram, mostly messing around with foundations and skincare. And, oh, yeah, and dyeing my hair.
Hair, you say? Sharp as a tack. Miriam, follow-up question.
How did that turn out, actually?
It turned out beautifully, Miriam. It is so funny. Like, you know, this obviously will change us as a society in you know, various ways.
Yeah.
And one of the ways is that I'm now swaggering around thinking that I need never go to the hairdresser again, which is absolute codswallop. But, no, the home dye job turned out grand, actually. Yeah. And, you know, the bathroom is still, it doesn't look like an abattoir at the moment.
And do you think it will change us, what we're going through at the moment? Or will we just all go right back to the way we were?
I hope not. I mean, I hope that we really value the so-called unskilled workers, like the people who are in the supermarkets right now, you know, restocking our shelves, you know, manning the cash points, the tills, and that we will pay our nurses properly. I mean, they are literally putting their lives on the line for us right now, and they are being paid, you know, a ridiculously small amount of money for it. I would really like that we would reconfigure our priorities.
And she had this advice to offer as to how to stay sane.
Do the kind of the basics in taking care of yourself, and to kind of accept that kind of fundamentally we're all powerless, and all we can do is our small little bit in the day, and to be grateful for the good things and the good people that we have. But without a doubt, it's a tricky time, and everyone should be kinder to themselves and kinder to others, because we don't know what's going on in another person's head.
Marion Keyes with Miriam on Sunday back in April. And how to celebrate your birthday in a pandemic fell to no less a luminary than Bono himself. He sprung a call into Wine Tuberty at the start of May. He turned 60 this year, but there were no Harley Davidsons or glitter balls. This celebration was fairly low-key.
It's not really the moment for a big celebration. I'm just grateful that I got here, and I'm really grateful to the people who got me to where I am, and the band, and my family, and my mates, and the country who gave us, you know, you two, an incredible life, and, you know, and allowed us to be able to afford to be useful in this moment, which is, I want to thank the country for putting up with, you know, my sometimes avuncular self. But I'm feeling pretty meditative now and reflective and just giving thanks, really.
Did something happen in your life in the last, say, 3 to 5 years that made you do a personal or physical audit?
Yeah.
And what was that?
But I'm sort of, you know, there's a few things, and I'd rather not get into it. I mean,
okay.
People have enough, you know, to be thinking about. And
yeah. No, I just ask curiously because I just get the sense reading about you, and I mean, I don't know you particularly well, but reading an interview here or there, or whatever, I got the sense something. And again, I'm not prying as to what happened, but I get the sense that you've been very reflective about the world. More so, I know you do that anyway, but just particularly in the last number of years.
Yeah, well, you know, I you sort of, you do come across, you know, your own mortality. It happens to people at a very early age or later, you know, the loss of a relative or can happen to you personally. There's just a moment where you realize you can't, you know, just drive yourself into a wall and expect the wall to crumble.
Now you might put a dent in it. You are Bono, after all. Now, Bono's great, but really, we kind of know him, one of our own and all that, and everyone's got a Bono story. So all hail Alan, who texted in the question we'd all wanted to know.
Is Matt Damon sleeping on your couch? And if so, is he helping with the housework?
Matt Damon, well, look, everybody has, most of us have been trying to dodge Matt Damon since...
Contagion.
Since Contagion. He's a, you know, Johnny Nomates, isn't he? I've known him for a long time. He's an incredible human being. His family are, yes, they are close by. But I'll tell you one thing that really annoys me about him is all the locals here have voted him sort of sexiest man in Dalkey, which I find offensive. And when I go in there, and I go, what? What is that all about? They said, oh, yeah, he's been posing with a super value plastic bag. Yeah. And I'm like, what's that all about? He carries stuff in a Bono. He carries, he walks around, he swims. he used to do the shopping before it got locked up. So, yeah, no, he's... It's great that, and it's great, I think, confidence. He's showing confidence in the country.
Yeah.
He could have left.
Sure.
He said no. He sees the madness that's going on in his own land, and he loves it here.
Yeah.
And he's a proper person.
Bono with Ryan Tuberty back in May, but the COVID celeb crush of the year was indeed Matt Damon. Celebs aside, there was no mistaking the tedium of much of the year. For kicks both cheap and nasty, Ray D'Arcy was doing this.
Without the benefits of post-production, without the benefits of turning up the volume later on or putting any sort of reverb or echo on it, I got a pin from the Wardrobe Department of RTE, from Catherine Manning over there, and I'm now going to live on the radio, probably never been done before for good reason. I'm going to drop it here so we can all, as a nation, on this Wednesday afternoon, hear a pin drop. Are you ready? Shh. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. That was a pin dropping. I know. So sorry. Strange times. Strange times. Strange things happen to people.
Yes, lethargy and tedium. Ryan Tuberty too was feeling the ennui of the hour.
Ryan, what is an egg cup holder? Oh, yeah, you're right. I am now holding an egg cup. So does that make my hand an egg cup holder? Or if I put the egg cup on a plate, what? I'd say you're a great crack to live with. But I do get your point. You, what is an egg cup holder? You are. I am. Anyone who, oh Lord.
Yes. However, all of that was punctured by this.
I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you.
No. That's true. I mean, you'd be somewhere else entirely. You'd be a different person. And me too. But we have done so much good for one another.
You know I love you. And I'm never going to feel the same way for anyone else.
I know.
I'd go.
The chain. Normal People, it was something rather special. The adaptation of Sally Rooney's novel by Lenny Abrahamson gave the country exactly what it needed. Well, maybe not what everybody needed. Liveline gave us a quite magnificent Normal People special.
It's the new normal is that our young people in school uniforms go to school, finish school and then go off with a girl or a boy or whatever and have sex. And to me, that's not normal and that's not acceptable. I, as a parent, don't find it acceptable sitting down with my daughter or my son.
It's not a new normal. This has been going on.
This shouldn't be normal. This shouldn't be normal.
Since humans were on this planet, this has been going on. So it's not a new normal.
It's being portrayed in the media day in and day out. And I think our young people need a break from sexualisation and being sexualised.
But if you look at the name of the programme, what's the name of the programme? What was the name of the programme?
It's not normal for your teenage daughter to be getting into bed with another school kid. That's not normal.
Good times. But if the second lockdown brought us the rise of smug sea swimmers, for lockdown one, it was sourdough. And one man in particular really took the whole thing to heart.
So prep time for sourdough starter, 5 minutes, right? And you're going, wow, 5 minutes, I have 5 minutes. Fermentation time, 7 days. Total time, 7 days and 5 minutes. At the end of it all, I hope I will have a lovely loaf of sourdough bread, which I'll photograph and post on every social media platform available to me.
No, you won't, because it'll turn out that your sourdough just won't rise. But to be witness to Ray Darcy's epic struggle in baking was worth it. That man does nothing by halves. Back in a bit. Welcome back to this playback special of the year. In the US on May 25th, the death of George Floyd when a policeman knelt on his neck sparked riots and galvanised the Black Lives Matter movement. And the shock of that death reverberated close to home as young Irish people spoke on Liveline over a few weeks in June about the racism they had encountered on a daily basis here in Ireland. Here's Franz from Dingle.
Like, I work in a shop here in Dingle and just a lot of people come in asking so many questions about why I'm black and stuff. And they just start off by asking where I'm from, where I was born and stuff. And I say, but I'm Irish, I'm from Kerry, I was born in Tralee Hospital, I've lived in Dingle all my life, and they just keep pushing and pushing to find out why I'm black, like, and not white, and then I tell them my mother's from Ghana, so that's where I got my colour from, like, but they just keep pushing to get that answer out of me. Yeah.
and it was an encounter on the GAA pitch that was truly shocking.
And you're a good Ga player, I see.
Yeah, I kick a bit of ball, all right.
Well, who isn't in Kerry, but...
You're kind of forced into it, right, from a young age. But, I would have experienced a few incidents on the pitch as well. There was one that really stands out to me, was when under-16s, we would have been playing away, and I wasn't actually even playing, I was doing water boy because I was injured. And I ran on with a bit of water to give to one of my teammates.
Okay.
And his marker looked over to me and shouted at him, "Go back to your cotton field." And he laughed at himself as if it was a big joke. Like, but it didn't really affect me. It didn't really hit me then. I just kind of let the game play out. I didn't really think much of it. But when I got home then, I got a text off one of their players. He was umpire that day. And he said he reported it to the referee, and the referee will do whatever. So your man got a bit of a ban.
Well done, yeah, well done. That someone else had the courage to report it.
Yeah,
because the burden, as we were saying over the last few days, the burden shouldn't fall on people who are the victims of racism. To be a victim is enough discomfort, to say the least. That's too small a word for it. But the onus shouldn't just be on the victim to stand up to the perpetrator.
Franz from Dingle, and Joe also spoke to Trey. Trey's in fifth class, and he read a letter he'd written for a project on racism.
My name is Trey Jones. I'm 11 years old. People say I'm mixed race, but I say that I'm black because I know what people see when they look at me. I'm proud to be black. Since I was a baby, I've suffered from racism from adults and children who are white. I've been called the N-word so many times. I've been told to go back to Africa. I've been called chocolate-faced monkey and burnt, and that I'm a little slave boy. These things really hurt my feelings, and I will hear these things like this for all my life. I wish white people would stop being racist and be kinder to all races.
11-year-old Trey talking to Joe Duffy on Liveline in June. Now, the summer brought us a government, eventually, June 27th, to be exact. But to be totally honest, it was a kind of a by the way, because really, we were all about the COVID. And while the staycation took centre stage, not everyone was content to caravan in Kerry. Evelyn O'Rourke went out to the airport to talk to these Amsterdam-bound gentlemen back at the start of July.
I'm flying to Amsterdam, love, I am. Well, to get high as a
motherfucker. We're going to Amsterdam for sightseeing, we're going to do the Heineken bar, and then go down the canals and enjoy the scenery. And the nightlife. We love the nightlife.
Are you worried about flying?
No, I'm not.
Your nanny said to you to wear a mask.
My nanny told me to harness my whole body.
How long are you going for?
Only going about 3 days.
And what's your plan when you come back? Will you quarantine?
Ah, yes, of course, yeah.
2 week quarantine.
And it's worth it for 3 days?
Ah, yeah. Well, we're at the main sitting in the lockdown for something, so a weekend trip, well, a 3 day trip should do us, you know what I mean?
We're out walking now the last 4 months. Well, only about 4 months I am, so you know what I mean? I had to spend the saving somewhere.
Are you worried about getting sick over there?
I am not. I am fit and healthy. I'm an athlete.
We will be sticking to the social distancing over there, and we will. So
when you come back, you're going to hide away?
Stay away from Nanny and Grandad for 2 weeks.
Let's hope Brian Tuberty didn't catch them.
If this is green jersey stuff, as citizens, could somebody in the committee say, shut it down? Like, if you don't want people to travel, tell us not to travel. We've been good with the rules. It's not nice. We don't want to. We all want to go on a plane and travel to Spain and Italy and wherever we want to go. But just say to them, I'm afraid... Or one summer, you're actually going to have to plough all that money you're going to spend in bars in Spain and France and Italy. You're going to plough it into your own neighbours, towns, villages and counties.
I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed. But to fly or not to fly dominated much of the conversation this year. Because let's face it, with stadiums deserted, gigs cancelled and pubs closed, entertainment as we know it was all but called to a halt. And it was a bit grim. However, in August, the Drama On One brought us Hamlet, Prince of Derry, adapted by Colin Murphy, with Stage Beyond Theatre Company, featuring adults with learning disabilities acting from home, and the voices were recorded remotely during lockdown. No mean feat. And it brought us Twitter postings, viral videos, video gamers fighting to the death, and of course, this.
Recording.
To be or not to be, that is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to suffer the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, or to take arms against the sea of troubles, and by opposing end them, to die, to sleep no more, and by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to, this a consummation devoutly to be wished.
Hamlet, Prince of Derry, from the Drama On One in August. But that month also brought us Golfgate, when the Oireachtas Golf Society flouted so many restrictions, it was hard to keep up. The outrage was palpable. Politicians resigned, judges were judged, bankers chastened, and even RTE broadcasters, were slapped and banished. EU Commissioner Phil Too Big to Fail Hogan held out for as long as he could, but in the end, he too tumbled.
No, let me be very clear. I made a mistake by going to that event. I am embarrassed about it. When I see all of the various tragedies around the country arising from COVID regulations, I know I should not have been there. I've apologised for that profusely. I think of all the people that have suffered bereavement. I think of the frontline workers. And a gathering of that nature was not appropriate in this time. There is no excuse for this.
But it was Alison O'Connor speaking to Claire Byrne, who heard that apology and, well, pretty much nailed it.
I don't see Phil Hogan being asked at any time soon to contribute to any book with the title The Art of the Public Apology. You know, do you? I think he came across as Big Phil, pure thick. The attitude is all Mayfain. And I too would have thought over the weekend, look, maybe we need to be pragmatic here. He has an important portfolio. We're very cross. It has done an awful lot of damage. But I think we've crossed that Rubicon now. I think you have to have your standards. We've really, if you reflect on it, and it's not over yet, it's a scandal, which unlike anything we've seen in Irish public life in terms of the anger, you just have to listen to Liveline to appreciate that for the last number of days, the huge sadness that's there, and the sense that it is just a kick in the teeth to people who, you know, have suffered so much over the last few months.
Ooh, and all of that before RTE's own photo shoot disaster in November, the Montrose 2 metres landing all the greats in hot water. But by October, after scraps between NEFED and the government, we were back in level 5. Lockdown 2, no crack at all. Did someone mention a dry robe? But underneath the year, like a low rumble, Brexit. At the start of September, the UK knowingly and willingly flouted international law by going back on what they'd agreed last year. So much outrage. On Morning Ireland, Audrey Carvel spoke to Philippe Lambert, MEP and member of the Brexit Steering Committee. And for him, a deal was a deal.
Maybe Mr. Johnson should learn reading English, because if I'm not mistaken, that treaty has been written in English, which is his native tongue. So probably should have taken time to read it before signing it. I mean, he was and he is the elected Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, and that comes with responsibilities. And the first of it is knowing what you do.
Ooh, ouchie. And in the final weeks of 2020, it all got very real indeed. Boris went for dinner with Ursula past the fish. Lively and interesting versus Frank. But still, no deal. But on Christmas Eve, sure you wouldn't want to rush it, a deal all sides could live with, finally. One described by the EU president as good, fair and balanced.
The EU rules and standards will be respected. We have effective tools to react if fair competition is distorted and impacts our trade. Secondly, we will continue cooperating with the UK in all areas of mutual interest. For example, in the field of climate change, energy, security, and transport. Together, we still achieve more than we do apart. And thirdly, we have secured 5.5 years of full predictability for our fishing communities and strong tools to incentivize to remain so.
And by the strike of Big Ben on New Year's Eve, they were gone. Brexit was over, one way or t'other. But as big a story as Brexit was and will continue to be, it was really all about the COVID, and still is. So let's finish on the chink of light we all so badly needed, the vaccine.
And we go straight this lunchtime to the news that's just been breaking in the last hour that a vaccine jointly developed by Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech was 90% effective in preventing COVID-19 infections in ongoing phase 3 trials.
That was November 9th, then last month EU approval, and Hooray-housen. On Tuesday last, grandmother of 10, 79-year-old Annie Lynch, became the very first person in the Republic of Ireland to receive the COVID-19 vaccine. And the rollout has begun. So yes, we're back in lockdown. No sugarcoating it and no crack whatsoever. But there is real, tangible hope for the year ahead. That is it for this playback special. Thank you for listening. Talk to you next week. Do you